John Daly here. You know what day it is?
Neither do I.
I live life daily. That's why I only spin on Moto Casino. Moto's got daily free bonuses, daily tournaments, new slots added daily. And the best part? Guaranteed daily jackpots. You can't beat that. So today's the day you grip it and spin it with me on Moto. America's social casino. Play for free on Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Thursday morning. And we go to our 102.5, the game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome in our friend Jeff Schultz from The Athletic. Jeff, good morning. How you doing?
I'm good, thanks. How are you guys doing?
We're great. I always appreciate good. You taking time to join us, so thanks for being with us. Jeff, we've talked with you a lot before about the SEC and expansion with Oklahoma and Texas coming in, and now the hot topic of conversation is whether or not the SEC is going to play an 8-game conference schedule or move to a 9-game conference schedule. And it's been, you know, at one point it was a foregone conclusion that 9 was coming as soon as possible, and now maybe not the case. So where's the latest on where we are in terms of the SEC determining whether it's going to be an 8-game conference schedule or a 9-game conference schedule moving forward?
Well, the latest, unless something stunning happens very, very soon, is it's not going to happen this week. And in terms of definitive answer about what's going to happen in 2024, obviously the 22 schedule set. And then they're going to table it and continue to discuss it. And 24 and 25 are still kind of in flux, which to me is crazy. I mean, I think SEC coaches and programs are sort of, you know, that they're stuck on 8 for their own vested interest. They like easy wins over the Abilene Christians of the world, and they like easy home paydays. And I don't think enough regard has been given to the quality, overall quality of the product. And obviously SEC football is, and I think most people certainly in the South would agree it's the best conference in the country, but you know, when you play 8 conference games and you play 4 against, you know, weaklings, there's a reason why a lot of fans either don't show up for those games or they leave at halftime. And, you know, I just think there needs to be a more bigger picture view of this and really honestly for the betterment of the sport and as something that, you know, pay back for the fans to give them something. I don't see why going from 8 games to 9 games is considered that big a deal.
Well, especially when, you know, other conferences have already gone there, right? I mean,
absolutely.
Especially as you keep expanding and, I don't see how. I mean, you wrote it, you know, how about 10? And I'm with you. I think you make the case for 10, but let's get to 9 first. So it sounds, Jeff, like, one, I understand different programs have different profiles. And right. As you also wrote, you know, job security is something that is, you know, a consideration here. So Vanderbilt, Kentucky, some of these programs may aren't as keen on 9. I get that. But it also sounds like Nick Saban, I mean, I guess just because the proposed 3 permanent teams are really tough for Alabama, maybe. I don't know if that's it or what, but it sounds like he is less bullish on it than he has been for a long time.
Yeah, I think Nick, along with maybe a couple other coaches, who knows, the way a 9-game schedule would work is you'd have 3 fixed opponents every year and the other 6 would rotate. And maybe he does not like his 3 fixed opponents. And I'm sure certain programs also perceive it's like, well, is one of our opponents, you know, team A, we want it to be team B. Obviously everybody's going to want to get the weaker teams in there, not the stronger teams, in terms of the permanent, opponent. And there's probably a couple other factors too that come into play. I'm sure, many of the coaches, want to know how strength of schedule, will fit into the 12-team playoff field. In other words, we all know the NCAA basketball tournament, and the committee always considers, well, not just what your record is, but who do you play? And I would imagine that will come into play more in a 12-team playoff field, obviously, than it did with four, or has with four, or certainly it did with two. And I get why that's a concern, but I also think it's like if you have a pretty decent record in the SEC and you're coming out of the SEC with a strong record, you're going to be in the playoff field. And then I think another last factor would be media rights. ESPN, CBS, they're paying a certain amount of money, which equates to about $50 million a program right now annually, to broadcast the games, and they're getting eight conference games per program. Well, I'm sure they're theorizing, well, if it goes to nine games per program, shouldn't we make more money? And I understand that, but I also just think it's like you do the right thing now, and eventually the money is going to get there, because you go to nine SEC games, look, the value of your whole season ticket package and your sponsorships go up, right? I mean, Vanderbilt, you know, there in your town, is the value of their season ticket package is going to be much higher if they're playing, let's say, Alabama or Auburn or someone who's not in their normal three-team wheelhouse, as opposed to if they're playing, you know, a non-conference opponent. So the sponsorships, ticket prices, concessions, everything goes up in value. So I think you do it for that reason. And the other thing is, and I don't honestly take the side of media companies like Disney and ESPN that often in this argument, but I mentioned this the other day. You know, I think the whole value of media rights deals is going to be really interesting moving forward. We all know Disney is laying off a bunch of employees. That includes ESPN. A lot of people are moving away from cable packages and going to streaming services. I mean, Joe, you know this. When the NFL decided, you know, starting next year, they're going to put a wild card game on a streaming service, on, I think it's Peacock, that's a huge deal for the NFL. And that says something. And I, if I'm ESPN, you know, I'm thinking, well, wait, I don't know if we want to give any more money. You know, we don't know where things are going. They're losing subscribers like crazy, because a lot of young people much younger than me, don't get cable TV anymore. And so I understand why, while they want to sort of stand back and watch. But I do think if the SEC moves forward, eventually the money will be there and the value of their package basically goes up.
Jeff Schultz from The Athletic with us here on Robbie and Rexford. And Jeff, one of my favorite parts about SEC football is whenever all these coaches get together, usually somebody says something really dumb and really interesting. And this year's award,
I know what's coming.
Oh yeah, this year's award goes to Eli Drinkwitz. He was talking about NIL and about how players are making more money than his brother-in-law, who is a pediatrician, and says,
and
"quote
saves
he
lives.
Saves lives," while also not realizing that he's making $6 million a year. Apparently, what'd you make of that from Eli Drinkwitz?
I think you just laid it out perfectly. I mean, it's like, okay, look, my wife was a teacher for, you know, for 20, 25 years, you know, and so she was molding young minds. So I'm sorry. I think she's worth more than the Wake Forest football coach. I just do, you know. but yeah, I think he, and I, you know, I don't know Eli Drinkwitz personally. Maybe he didn't mean it to come out the way it came out. But that's the way it came out, and it's America. You know, guys who are big and fast, you know, make a lot of money. Coaches who can coach those guys to win a lot of games, they make a lot of money. Teachers, you know, don't make a lot of money. Some pediatricians make good money, but obviously not as much as an SEC football coach. So I think he sort of stuck his foot in his mouth on that one.
Yeah. No. And then he. I guess he went on Feinbaum yesterday and, like, you know, attacked the media. Of course.
Yeah.
You know,
so, of course. Yeah, I know. Well,
it's always our
fault. Welcome to our world. Right?
Yeah. But on that topic, you know, it's funny because I think, you know, Seth, our buddy Seth Emerson, and she's like, you know, there's all this talk about scheduling this week. One, because all these other issues that are, you know, mm-hmm. there are huge issues. No one can do anything about them right now. You know, this is the one thing they can control, and they still don't do anything about the scheduling. But where are you right now just on where this is going I mean, Nick Saban's out here talking about, hey, let's just basically just make it the NFL employees and formalize everything. Like, how are you thinking about all this?
I specifically on NIL.
Yeah.
I assume you mean. I don't think anybody can know where it's going, because this obviously was such an extreme from where it's at for decades and decades. And I think probably what's going to happen eventually is the companies or the collectives or whatever they are that are guaranteeing all this money to players / recruits. I know we're not supposed to say recruits. Eventually a lot of them or some of them are going to get burned. Some of the deals might pay off. I think more of the deals will not pay off for them. And I think there's going to be sort of a market correction on how much money is paid, what the guarantees are to the player. A lot of players are going to take the money and then go transfer after 5 minutes. And I think all this is going to happen over a few years, honestly. I think it's going to be a while before the dust settles. And then I think once the dust settles, we'll get to know what exactly we're dealing with here. And what happens after that, I don't know. I don't think it'll ever go to a straight employee situation as much as these have become businesses. But I also don't think they're going to be normal student athletes either. So my guess is in somewhere in the future, I think there's going to be sort of this gray category of they're not really students, but they're not really professional either. And I think that's kind of where they're going to sit, whether there's going to be some minimum in terms of how much they have to go to class, what the value of their scholarship is, I don't know. I just think, honestly, it's going to be a while before we get there, because I think it's, and this has been, the term has been used, it is the wild, wild west right now. Coaches were naive if they thought NIL was not going to creep into the recruiting world. Of course it was going to creep into recruiting. And they got to figure all that out. So I think it's going to be a while.
Well, Jeff, really enjoy following along your work. Thanks so much for taking time to be with us this morning, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thanks for having me, guys.
Absolutely. Jeff Schultz from The Athletic, our guest on Robbie and Rexroy. We'll continue the conversation on SEC football and get a little bit into the conference scheduling discussion and debate that's taking place right now. Take your thoughts on that as well. 615-737-1025. That's coming up next. Make sure you join 1025 The Game for the second annual Music City Celebrity Golf Tournament presented by Gary Force Acura, benefiting Souls for Souls. Coming up next Wednesday, June the 7th at Hermitage Golf Course. You can put your team together, come play with athletes, musicians, and other local celebs to support a great cause and have loads of fun. And if you want to support Souls for Souls but can't play golf with us, just check out our silent auction items. Go to thegamenashville.com/golf for more information. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, The Game, presented by TJ Anderson Homes of Benchmark Realty, where their advanced pay by TJ option can save you thousands when selling your home. We are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by Superbook, live from our 1025 The Game studio, brought to you by Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical. I got some tickets to give away, a pair of tickets to see Monster Jam coming up at Nissan Stadium on July 1st. Be the third caller, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Caller number three will win a pair of tickets to see Monster Jam at Nissan Stadium coming up on July 1st. Thanks to Jeff Schultz from The Athletic for being with us in the last segment. Joe, what do you make of the ongoing debate in the SEC as to whether or not to play 8 conference games or 9 conference games beginning in 2024/2025 when Texas and Oklahoma are coming in? Some coaches pointing out that they do have some non-conference games that are already on the books for 2024 under contract, and that could be just a negotiating tactic on the part of these coaches. What do you make of the ongoing debate in the SEC as to whether or not to play 8 or 9 conference games?
Yeah, it should be 9. It was going to be 9. It was very simple, and now it's gotten complex. But you go to 8, or you stay at 8. Remember, you're adding teams. It's going to be – so the model is 8 and 1 locked-in opponent and rotating, because, you know, the way things have gone already before adding Texas and Oklahoma, you've had these teams that, like, play each other, you know, once every 15 years. It's not that extreme, but it's you know, way too long with the breaks between some teams playing each other. So they're going to have one locked-in opponent, and they're going to – like, they're already getting rid of the divisions, which is – that's a tradition of 30 years that's going away. And I understand that tradition is just getting the crap beat out of it in college football. Okay, college football is completely changing. You've said before you don't want to become the NFL. I mean, it's a little late, okay? But I still believe in tradition of, like, keeping some of these great games. And so you stick with eight. I guess it's just going to be Tennessee-Vanderbilt, and then the Tennessee-Florida annual thing goes away. The Tennessee-Alabama thing goes away.
Yep.
You know, if you go to nine, it will be three. I mean, that to me is a compelling reason alone. But also, yes, like Jeff said, play more games. Play more games that matter. Be standardized with the other top leagues. I mean, the SEC is the best league. The SEC is the best talent, the best coaches, the best teams. And you're afraid to play the same number of games as the Big Ten and these other leagues do? No. Come on. It's to me, ridiculous. And I think that as this playoff expands, 12 is next, and we'll see how long it'll stay at 12. It'll be a while, but at some point, probably goes to 16. You know, look, ugh. I mean, I know. I mean, maybe not, but I wouldn't be surprised. And the thing is, it's you're going to get to the point where, yes, 9-3 teams are going to be in there for sure. And also, so you know what? Strength of schedule should absolutely be more of a priority. Strength of schedule should be talked about more as it is in college basketball and other sports. So if that's the case, then you worry less. I understand if you're in the coaching profession, there are coaches who are like, yeah, well, you know what? I need to make bowl games to keep my job and things like that. I mean, and I get that. Everybody in these, even in a league like the SEC, there's a wide range of interests. But the right thing is to go to nine.
I agree. Like I'm rooting heavily for nine. We're going to get to nine at some point. Like the money at some point is going to win out here, and it's going to be too much to pass up, and it's going to go to nine. It's weird to me. I mean, it kind of felt like this time 6 months ago that nine was a foregone conclusion, and it was a foregone conclusion that it was going to happen as soon as possible when Texas and Oklahoma came into the league. I've always understood, like, I think Vanderbilt's a perfect example. I've always understood, like, their – and I don't know that this is their standpoint, but I could see where it is of, you know, let's stay at eight. We like our four non-conference games. We'll get to six and get in a bowl game that way. Like, I understand, like you said, there are a wide range of interest in the conference when it comes to that those kind of things. But, like, your Alabamas and your Tennessees and your Georgias and your LSUs of the world, like, it just makes so much sense to go to nine games. You have better games. I think what you brought up is the reason why I want to see it the most. I have no interest in the eight-game conference schedule and the one permanent opponent. I have no interest in that whatsoever. You know, I know a lot of Tennessee fans for a while were like, well, maybe it wouldn't be such a bad thing if they didn't have to play Alabama every year. Yeah, last year is a perfect example of why it's a great thing. Like, because when that happens, every Tennessee fan ever is going to remember that game for the rest of their lives. And already with the nine, like, I think Tennessee is probably going to lose one game that Tennessee fans love. Like, I don't think if they go to nine, Tennessee-Florida is going to be an annual thing.
Yeah, that's and Remington brings that up on the text line. Kentucky has been the team more talked about as than Florida, along with, you know, Vanderbilt and Alabama.
So. Right, so you're already losing games that are an annual tradition anyway. But, I mean, that's going to happen at some point if you go to nine. Like, the schedule is just going to dictate that.
Right.
I have no interest in the 8-1 model where you got eight conference games and one permanent opponent.
No, it sucks.
None whatsoever.
It sucks. Yeah. And, again, it's like, look, there are a couple things that are also worth mentioning in this. If you have eight, you can load up your non-league at home, and these college towns are absolutely dependent on a football game day. You're talking about millions and millions of dollars. So then on the, you know, like, on the year where you have, like, you know, like five road games in the SEC, you know, you lose that. I understand that. But you know what? I mean, look, this is one of those things where it's like there is enough money. There is so much money going around here. I understand that some of these businesses, like, well, we don't get that money unless you have a home football game. There's that, and then there's also the money that some of these programs get for, you know, for the guarantees for playing these games, and I get that, but man, like this week before weekend before rivalry week, which is basically like, well, I'll just tune out the SEC this weekend. There's no point in there's like two games involving SEC football teams that are right. remotely watchable this weekend. I just to me that's just that's a bad tradition. And I just like at some point this becomes more like, you know, and the funny thing is, of course, you don't have to go back that far to when non-league scheduling was basically other. It was before it was called Power Five, but it was just other top leagues. I mean, that's who you played.
Well,
we've gotten way too much filler in the schedules.
Well, and the other part of this is with the 9-game schedule, you're playing and seeing conference opponents more. Like, I read something the other day, and I guess I didn't realize this. You know, Texas A&M has been in the league since, what is it, 2012, 2013, around there? Georgia still has not gone to Texas A&M. It's 2023,
yeah.
And they've not gone to Texas A&M.
Right.
Been in the league for over a decade.
And that's why they're going to one if they stay with eight.
Right, yeah. Exactly. Like, it's one of those – but, you know, you get a 9-game schedule, and the way that they've got this thing laid out is – you can rotate, and you'll see, let's say a player comes in and they play 4 years. Well, the idea is you will play each team once at home and each team once on the road in those 4 years. And I like the idea of that.
Yeah.
So, it's got to – like there's no reason whatsoever that we're sitting here today in 2023 and Texas A&M's been in the league for over a decade and Georgia's not gone on the road to Texas A&M yet. It's just completely strange.
Right. And I mean, it all speaks to how stupid all of it is.
Yeah, exactly.
These massive expansion of leagues and all of it. It's just, but I don't know. How much more can I complain about it?
Well, now this week they've had the SEC meetings down there in Destin, Florida. We're going to have SEC Media Days here in Nashville this year. So looking forward to that coming up later this summer.
Yay!
Joe is very excited about it. He loves SEC Media Days.
It seriously pisses me off. It does.
Why?
Because Hoover, Alabama, like, it's a big deal in Hoover, Alabama.
Yeah,
it's a great event for that town, and they embrace it, and it means something to them. We don't need it here.
No, I thought you meant you just had a hatred for it itself.
Well, there's that, too.
Well, no, I agree.
I mean, last year I got to skip it, and it was so amazing. I was like,
went, and I had a great time.
That's right. You went, didn't you? You and Caroline went?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was fun.
And it was in Hoover last year, right?
It was in Atlanta.
Remember?
Well, screw that, too.
I will say,
it all sucks!
It was kind of cool to have it in, like, Radio Row was in the College Football Hall of Fame, which, yeah. I mean, it was pretty cool.
Sure. But Atlanta also. Atlanta, Nashville, we don't need that thing. Give it Hoover. No. Hoover has a charm, and it's people go to the karaoke bar, whatever.
Mayor of Hoover over here.
Wasn't it Hoover where Jeremy Pruitt used to coach?
You better believe it, Hoover High School.
And that was where he was on camera, like, asparagus.
That is right.
What's that?
The legend was born at Hoover High School.
Asparagus? What is that thing?
I need to find that audio.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. We'll take your thoughts on that. By the way, we've begun the annual Nick Saban tradition of, is this what you want college football to be? It started again this week down there in Destin, which I've enjoyed.
Yep. Yeah. Well, Nick at some point is going to, I mean, I understand it's usually like, okay, so what's the self-serving message from Nick Saban this year? But I do feel like he doesn't have that much longer.
No.
So I think there may be actually a little bit of looking out for the larger interests of the sport.
Maybe so. Coming up next, Mike Vrabel kind of, sort of, not really addressed the DeAndre Hopkins situation yesterday. We'll get into that, get Joe's thoughts on that, and why it upset Jared Stillman as well yesterday. All that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Tune in for Nashville Sounds Baseball tonight at 6:04 on 94.9 The Fan. The Sounds taking on the Charlotte Knights, the AAA affiliate of the Chicago White Sox. Sounds Baseball on 94.9 The Fan, presented by 312 Pizza Company, Farm Bureau Health Plans, and Family Leisure. 6:04, very specific time tonight for the Sounds. It's like tea times at golf.
Yeah.
Had a tea time last week of 8:44 a.m. My wife was like, what is that? It's what happens at golf,
that's
man.
What it is, yeah.
6:04 tonight for the Nashville Sounds.
I like it.
615-737-1025, our phone number. 615-737-1025. So, Joe, lost in the midst of the Andrew Burnett, Barry Trotz press conference yesterday. The Titans had another day of OTAs. Not much that was newsworthy yesterday in terms of the on-the-field stuff at the OTAs, but Mike Vrabel was asked about DeAndre Hopkins and his interest in DeAndre Hopkins, and he answered those questions in a very Mike Vrabel fashion yesterday. Here's what Vrabel had to say on the Titans' potential interest in DeAndre Hopkins.
I think our focus has always been about the players that we have here, and we'll keep you updated as you know we continue to add players to the roster.
A guy like that available, is that kind of what you were touching on when you had mentioned, you know, how there's another phase of free agency, how it's not finished?
Well, players come available at different times of the year, all the way up until the trade deadline. And then, you know, some of those veteran players that may be out there that signed throughout the offseason and training camp and even into the season. So player acquisition is always going to be something that you can try to add to your roster at different times.
So that was Vrabel and what he had to say on the DeAndre Hopkins situation yesterday. Obviously, not specifically going into DeAndre Hopkins at all. Now, some around the NFL world yesterday took that as the Titans have no interest whatsoever in DeAndre Hopkins. I don't know that I necessarily took it that way. I took it as Mike Vrabel is not answering those type of questions ever, which he never does. So what do you make of the DeAndre Hopkins conversation, how Vrabel addressed the question, and your conversation with Stillman yesterday on Jared versus Joe about is Mike Vrabel falling short of living up to his promise, in Jared's words, of delivering a wide receiver to the fan base?
Does anyone else in the world think that he promised?
I don't think so.
Can you find another human who thinks that what he said at this last day of the draft was a promise?
I've not seen one yet.
Maybe on the side he went and gave somebody a pinky promise,
well,
Joe.
Maybe.
And then he touched his face with his pinky. That jinxed the promise. Yeah, it's just the exact standard answer from Vrabel that I'd expect. So I don't take anything from it in terms of their interest. My guess is they don't have a lot, but maybe they do. I don't read into that comment any. And as far as, Jared and I, Jared had this argument. We were talking about it yesterday. Like, he has to say something because of his promise. No. First of all, like I said, okay, so let's say he doesn't have interest in him. Like let's say Vrabel's like, yeah, man. And it was great being with Nuke in Houston, and he was great then. But really, just sketchy on his health and everything.
Yeah.
What if that's how he feels? Should he pretend he wants him?
Yeah.
Or should he honestly come out and say, you know, I hope someone else signs him. We don't have any interest in him. He's not going to say anything. He's not going to say anything. So don't expect him to say anything. There's no change in this, and he didn't promise anything.
Well, and he usually doesn't say anything even if he's interested in someone, right? Like, until they're on the team, he never really talks about him. I mean, heck, half the time they're on the team, he doesn't really talk about him. That's what it is with Vrabel.
Right.
So, there's that part of it. Now, I also would say, like, those around the league yesterday that thought that, oh, this means the Titans have no interest in DeAndre Hopkins. Like, I wouldn't go that far either. I don't walk away from Vrabel's comments yesterday saying, well, there's no chance the Titans are in the mix for DeAndre Hopkins now.
No, I agree. That's anybody who has that takeaway doesn't watch a lot of Vrabel pressers.
Yeah.
And if you don't, I don't blame you. But, that's I wouldn't take that from it. And, look, I think with Hopkins, I'd be monitoring because – how low is the price going to get?
Yeah.
It might get kind of low.
It might. I mean, look, there's, Albert Breer of Sports Illustrated, and this is one person, so you can take it for what it's worth. But he reached out to an executive and basically just asked the question, what does DeAndre Hopkins have left? And the quote was, quote, not much. He can't run anymore, end quote, was the Albert Breer quote from an executive around the league. So, I mean, if that's the viewpoint held by most of the league, like, what are you giving up to get DeAndre Hopkins out there? If he can't run anymore, I understand, we talked about it the other day, he's never been a burner, quote unquote.
But he's still been able to run.
But you got to be able to run and, make some plays downfield.
It's kind of important in that job.
It is. So, like, if the widely held belief is, and this is not just one guy that thinks he can't run anymore, then that's a problem for DeAndre Hopkins.
Maybe that's the GM who's going to sign him.
Well, maybe more misinformation.
Telling everybody else he can't run. Yeah, I don't know. That's an interesting quote, and someone's going to sign him. Again, if you can get him quite cheap and you're the Titans and he would actually be interesting coming here, then I think it's certainly worth considering. It sounds like, Kansas City and Buffalo, like right now he's holding out for more money than people want to pay him.
Right. Which, I mean, you can do that for a while, but eventually, if you're DeAndre Hopkins, you got to make a decision of, all right, do you want to – and this is the real thing. Does he want to go somewhere where he cares about winning a Super Bowl more, or is he looking for the biggest bag that he can get money-wise? That's the question that is out there with him.
Yeah. I mean, you're under contract, and then you get released, so you had an expectation – so certainly you're thinking about things financially, but also you have to know how this league works, right? You can't be totally blindsided by this if you're him, I wouldn't think. So I don't know. It's a good question, but I don't think he's gonna. If teams that are in that position are balking at what he might want, then who out there is just gonna all of a sudden come with the bag for him? I mean, it's. It happens fast in this league. You go from great player, and then 2 years later, you're just a cast off.
It's interesting, too. I mean, we've talked about the wide receiver market of what's still out there. Galladay's out there. Julio's out there. N'Keal Harry's out there. Sammy Watkins. I mean, I would put DeAndre Hopkins, I think, clearly at the top of that list. But what does he have left in the tank? I mean, honestly – he's younger than I thought he was. He's 30. He's going to be 31, I think, in 4 days. So he'll be 31 years old. It's not as old as I thought he was. It feels like he's been around forever. But I do wonder, the last part of what we've seen, beyond the injuries and the PED stuff that we talked about the other day, how much of what we saw from the end of him in Arizona was just he had no desire to be there whatsoever. I mean, it was pretty clear that place was falling apart with Cliff Kingsbury and Kyler Murray and all that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I mean, that place is a mess, so... so there's that, but they just, they can't run any more quote. Take it for what it is. It's an anonymous quote from one person,
right?
But one person thinks that, and I'm sure has watched some film.
I got one texter that says, "I call BS. Did you see him last year? Still a top five receiver." This is from a texter on a text line.
Ooh, top. Whoa, whoa.
Top five.
I did. I did see him some last year. He's not still a top five receiver. But I'm not. I guess I'll kind of agree. It's not like I thought he looked like he's fallen off the table either.
I mean, the question I have with him is, can he stay healthy? That's the thing. I mean, if he can stay healthy, then I think he's going to be good. I don't think he's going to be great like he used to be. I mean, look, there was a while where he was either the best wide receiver in the league or certainly in the conversation with two other guys. As the best wide receiver in the league. Those days are gone, in my opinion. But if he can stay healthy, I still think there's a chance he could be good. If you were promised right now.
He could certainly help the Titans.
Yeah, right. If you were promised right now that he played 15 games next year for whatever team it would be, his skill level right now, what he is as a player right now, what would that be on the Titans? I mean, at worst, it's number two, right? On their wide receiver in their wide receiver group, at best, it's number one ahead of Traylon Burks.
Yeah, yeah, he's right. I mean, it's Hopkins and Burks are your outside receivers, and if you told me that he can play all year, and I would not be surprised to hear also that he led them in receiving. I mean, that's where they are. But how much are you willing to pay for that? How much does it actually impact your bottom line? And how confident are you that he's going to stay healthy?
Well, and this goes back to, and it's not specifically with DeAndre Hopkins here, but it's a question that we've asked, and we've talked about it with Paul Kaharsky, and we talked about it after the draft, too, when they didn't take a wide receiver until the seventh round. How do the Titans view that position? We threw out the question, are they too casual with wide receiver? And again, just because they don't go get DeAndre Hopkins, that doesn't mean that that's just confirmation that they're too casual at the position. Maybe they agree with that executive and they think he can't play anymore. I mean, it could be as simple as that. But I do think that there is still that lingering question out there with a lot of Titans fans of why do the Titans not seem to take the wide receiver position more seriously?
Yeah, and it's fair. And I think what we're probably going to find out this year is if there are some guys who are on this roster now who are bigger difference makers than we realize, and that maybe internally they believe that, and it'll play out. I mean, internally, a couple years ago, heard about Nick Westbrook-Ikhine, and people were like, what are you talking about? I mean, at least has been like a viable player for them, right?
May still be.
Well, right. But I do think – I mean, I think Kyle Phillips is definitely part of the answer here. But what if he gets hurt? I mean, I guess you could play that game with anybody, right? Except that he's only been able to stay healthy for a couple games.
Right. So. Andrew on the text line says, get him cheap, juice him up a little bit, and we're good to go.
Well, there you go.
DeAndre, you should get back on PEDs, man.
Yep. Just cycle through. So you can pass the physical. Over. Yeah.
615-737-1025, our phone number, 615-737-1025. Coming up next, it is time for the Rob Rant. We'll get to that coming up next. Charles Robinson joining the show at 8 o'clock for his weekly visit as well. Looking forward to all that. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game.
Don't make me angry.
Sometimes you have to tell someone to pound sand.
You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
This is the Rob Rant.
Now
on Robbie and Rex Road.
You got to put Max in a position to challenge him because he's so hard-headed. He's got to prove to you. You either got to tell him he can't do it or embarrass him where he basically just gets mad. You two guys have been good for each other.
What is that?
That's asparagus. You don't like asparagus?
I ain't never heard of it.
Oh, it is that time of the day. Time for the Rob Rant here on Robbie and Rex Road. Nice clip there from Tua Days as Jeremy Pruitt was coaching a little high school football down there.
What is that?
What is that? It's asparagus. I think he's like what, 35, 40 years old at that time? Didn't know what asparagus
was.
That's
sad.
The video, though, is great because his face, he just has such a look of confused. Like, what? Is that?
Was it with, because to me, like, steak and asparagus? Yeah. Great meal.
It's great.
Also baked potato?
Yeah. Right, right. Was that what it was? Was the steak, was it like, were they eating steak?
I think so. Yeah. And if memory serves me correctly, like, the next move was to just drown the asparagus in honey mustard, I believe is what happened after that.
Come on.
I'm serious.
He put honey mustard all over the asparagus?
Yeah.
What?
That's scary.
I didn't even know this.
Maybe like a hollandaise sauce.
What
like, that'd
that?
Be nice.
But I remember several times when he was the head coach at Tennessee, that clip was sent to me, especially when he would do something stupid, which was, you know, quite frequently.
Yeah.
What is that? Thank you, Jeremy.
Legend.
Miss
you.
Well, speaking of legendary college football coaches in the SEC, we're going to continue to have that discussion. I brought this up earlier with Jeff Schultz from The Athletic, but I think it's worth you and I just having the discussion by itself. So, you know, as I said, one of my favorite parts about every time these SEC coaches get together is that there's always something stupid that comes up and always some comments made that you're like, huh, okay. I mean, last year it was Jimbo and, you know, Texas A&M having the greatest academic institution, ain't it? All that other stuff. I mean, Jimbo was a peach last year to deal with, and you know, all the oil money funding the NIL program down there. It was fun to listen to. This year, it's Eli Drinkwitz, and they were discussing NIL and the money that the players are making. And as Jeff Schultz, I think, laid out really well, it's the wild, wild west out there. People don't really know where it's going. And Nick Saban's had some comments this week about, you know, maybe unionizing players and basically making it like the NFL. And I don't know what's going to happen through all that. But Eli Drinkwitz was asked about college players making money through NIL, and talked about how the players are making more money than his brother-in-law, who is a pediatrician, and says, quote, he saves lives, which is a fine discussion if that's what you want to talk about with college players making money. But it's always hilarious to me that people bring this up when you're making $6 million a year like Eli Drinkwitz is making. Here's the full quote. Quote, we're giving guys 18 to 22-year-olds, life-changing money. People are making more money on NIL than my brother-in-law, who is a pediatrician who saves lives. And we kind of do it cavalier, and we think there's not going to be side effects or issues.
there's information out there. Bad actors out there always trying to make a dollar, running around campuses trying to gather information. It's going to become a key issue in our locker room. So I get, you know, the crux of what he's saying there. And obviously, you know, we've had this discussion too before about, you know, handing an 18-year-old before he's ever taken a snap of college football life-changing money and what that could do to someone. But it's just funny to me. These 18, 20, they're making more money than my brother-in-law. Meanwhile, he's sitting there making $6 million a year to coach these guys. It's
right.
Funny.
Yes, exactly. He's also making way, way more money than the – I mean, hey, it's a fair like profession to bring up. Like Jeff brought up earlier, teachers. I mean, a lot of people in society who do a lot of jobs that are really important and mean a lot to people and help people a lot. And yeah, I mean, social workers, teachers – you know, coaches that aren't at this level, on and on and on. So, fine. But, yeah, you coach football and make – what is it? He makes six
a year.
Man, I forgot that he got to six. Wow. Good for you, Eli. Yeah, again, it's like – I mean, I did go back and, like, I read the whole thing. And, I mean, the thing about Eli Drinkwitz is, I mean, I think Missouri has, like – it's in the works or whatever, like an NIL law where it's like very much incentivizes, you know, I mean, it's an attempt to try to keep the top talent at home if you go to in-state schools. So it's actually like in his state, he has, you know, his advantages that some coaches don't have. They're all in on it and all that stuff. And he's tried to damage control the hell out of this,
sure,
including going on Feinbaum. And again, yeah, like there is a fair point to be made just about what this does and the unintended consequences here. I get it. And I kind of appreciate any coach willing to say anything because so many of them are just absolutely terrified. Just
robots, yeah.
Exactly. They're terrified of this, but this is what happens when you do. So, and you know, it's just – he just didn't think it through. I feel like with him, he doesn't think some things through.
Yeah. I feel like that's
He does have a cool lightsaber, though.
He does. Yeah, I mean, it was really an impressive Darth Vader thing that he went with there. It's this NIL discussion. It's we knew it would get to this point where you're kind of wondering where you go from here when you're the rest of college football specifically, but college athletics. I mean, Nick Saban, that's basically all he's talking about down there in Destin is NIL and where things are going and unionizing student athletes. You know, we had Jeff Schultz on earlier. If you missed that, you can check it out on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcast. But I do wonder, like, as you look at the future of college football players, the scenario that Jeff brought up was pretty interesting in terms of, like, are they going to one day be kind of student athletes but not really student athletes? They're there to play football, and there's, like, a very minimal amount of time they have to go to class. Like, I do wonder what all that looks like as they move forward here.
I guess you could, for one thing, you could kind of say, isn't that what it is already? But
kind of.
But you are, yeah. I mean, you have to make progress. I can't imagine, like, I mean, it's amazing, too. I guess it was a while ago, but you think back to when the NCAA came with all the, really, the beefed up standards for retention and everything academically, right? It wasn't that long ago. So now, because the NCAA has been basically just completely declawed, we're just going to, like, there's just going to be no standards. It's not going to be college athletics at all. I mean, I hate that idea because still the vast, vast, vast majority of the people who go through these programs, they benefit from a scholarship. They benefit from the connections you make. They have regular jobs. They don't play professional sports. I mean, it's the tiny, tiny fraction of kids who do, you know, and now you can make money in college and you're not going to maybe be a pro athlete and you can stay, like, for example, Zach Eadie, he's coming back to Purdue. That's great. He has a degree already. Now he can get a graduate degree.
Back.
Yeah. And I'm a little surprised that Oscar T is not coming back. Kentucky might suck next year, huh?
Dude, I know.
Yeah. Sorry.
What's the difference?
What's that? Well, on paper, last year we were talking about, like, generational team. Man, what's going on? Maybe Cal's trying to – I was just going to bring this up. I think today, Tyron Lawrence, or soon, you know, probably announces return to Vanderbilt. And I think Tyron Lawrence coming back to Vanderbilt, to me, I think represents that there's a collective that has stepped up. You know, because if you're Tyron Lawrence, you are in demand and you can go somewhere. And I think anybody like that is going to command six figures to go or stay somewhere.
Yeah.
Logan, which I'm fine with.
Logan on the text line says, how's Drinkwitz making $6 million? They suck.
$6 million does, but that's where things are going too. And that's the thing here. As we continue to talk about this and unintended consequences, the money keeps going up. It's not just like coaches making $6 million, but now like position coaches are making $200K. I mean, so like the money's there. So why can't everybody share in it? I don't know where it's going. I have no idea.
Well, and it's interesting because like Nick Saban has been very vocal about all this for a while now, and it's continued down this week in Destin. And some people think, well, is he afraid that like his recruiting advantage is about to go out the door based on the NIL? And then you look at what happened last year, and based on the ranking,
I don't think that's it.
Based on the ranking, and this we'll see how it actually plays out on the field. Based on the ranking, like, that was one of his best recruiting classes of all time.
Yeah, I get it. I understand it. Like. A few years ago, he was like, if we allow these tempo offenses, everybody's going to get hurt. And be like, yeah, because they're kicking your butt on the field.
Exactly.
And that may be true. And then he adjusted and did the offense and did it better than, you know, I mean,
right.
or change the offense. I actually, in all seriousness, and I'm not a huge, as you know, like Saban apologist, I think he's actually speaking big picture as someone who speaks for the game on this. I don't think this is a self-serving. I really don't. You are skeptical, but I mean, like I said,
just,
like
I'm just smiling. I didn't like say anything.
Like last year when he freaked out about it, he was basically like, "Hey, boosters, A&M, yeah, Tennessee,
yeah,"
but they've stepped up. They're fine. They're gonna wherever it goes, Alabama, Georgia, Ohio State. Yep. They're going to have the advantages
for sure. Nick Saban apologist, Joe Rexroad here on the program. 615-737-1025, our phone number.
Charles Robinson loves him too, by the way.
Oh, well, we'll get into that with Charles. We'll get into a lot of things with Charles, including the DeAndre Hopkins situation. Should the Titans have interest? What does the interest look like in DeAndre Hopkins around the league? We'll get into all that and more hot NFL topics as well. Coming up next with Charles Robinson. This is Robbie and Rexroad, 1025-1063, the game.
John Daly here. You know what day it is?
Neither do I.
I live life daily. That's why I only spin on Moto Casino.
Moto's got daily free bonuses, daily tournaments, new slots added daily.
And the best part?
Guaranteed daily jackpots.
You can't beat that.
So today's the day you grip it and spin it with me on Moto.
America's social casino.
Play for free on Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.